This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. So, the only thing left to say is, you win? Order now on the McDonald's app, and you can also get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus. Rewards registration required. Points only on menu items. Delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Skills under a very, very difficult situation.
Cook, beautiful ball to Boyle. Oh, a splendid goal.
A nice little pass there for Osgood. And it's fouled by Baldwin. Baldwin will put it home. And Housman. Oh, and Harris getting in very hard there. And he sent Osgood away.
Speedy to Nevin. Now let's see something from middle Pat Nevin. Magic goal by Mickey Thomas.
Oh, Dixon! And Dixon again! And Chelsea equalise!
The ball for Dixon to chase, and he'll get there. Oh, he's found Gallivan!
Welcome to the Chelsea Special, a series of podcasts interviewing legendary Chelsea players from the 1960s to the present day, and some of the famous and infamous Chelsea supporters who followed them home and away. The Chelsea Special is presented by Martin King, author of Hoolifan and Ozzy, the King of Stamford Bridge, a supporter since the early 60s and the godfather of Chelsea supporters, and David Stamford Chidgey, producer of the Chelsea Fancast, writer for the CFC UK fanzine, and known affectionately as the Podfather. Join us for a trip down memory lane with some of Chelsea's most loved and revered players as they share their love for the club we love. Over nine seasons between 1983 and 1992, Kerry Dixon became one of the best-loved players ever to appear for Chelsea. Following near relegation to the third division, Kerry joined from Reading for £175,000 as John Neil sought to rebuild the team. Kerry scored 34 goals in his first season as Chelsea claimed the second division title. Scoring an iconic goal against Arsenal at Highbury in Chelsea's first match back in the top flight, Kerry scored 36 goals to win the Golden Boot and took his Chelsea tally to 70 in just 101 games, earning a call-up to the England squad in the process. A serious muscle injury in 1986 hampered both Kerry and Chelsea's tilt at winning the title, and a mere 2 years later, Chelsea found themselves back in Division 2. Although player unrest nearly led to Kerry's departure, Chelsea and Kerry bounced back, with Kerry scoring 25 goals, as Chelsea won the second division title for the second time. Kerry went on to score 26 goals on Chelsea's return to Division 1 as we finished fifth, our highest position since 1970. In March 1992, Kerry's 193rd and final goal in a Chelsea shirt was a spectacular shot from the edge of the box to beat Norwich City. That summer, he was sold for £575,000 to Southampton. But that wasn't quite the final moment in the love affair between Chelsea and Kerry Dixon. When Chelsea faced Luton Town at Wembley for the 1994 FA Cup semi-final, lining up at centre-forward for Luton that day was a certain Kerry Dixon. At the end of the match that Chelsea won 2-0, Chelsea supporters broke off from their celebrations to pay a final tribute to one of the club's favourite sons. 40,000 voices rightly proclaiming that there really was only one Kerry Dixon. A fitting tribute to a true Chelsea legend. With 193 goals in total to his name, Dixon is Chelsea's third highest goalscorer of all time, behind only Bobby Tamling and Frank Lampard. He's also eighth in the club's all-time appearances list. Kerry, who I've had the pleasure of working with loads, actually. I mean, you and I have done a podcast for ages, haven't we? But one of my heroes, as you well know. But this, hopefully this will be slightly different from stuff we've done before, because I've got somebody who really knows his onions with me today, because Martin's been going since the 60s, early 60s. So he outranks me totally. But first question, we wanted to try and answer some quite slightly different questions today. Anyway, the first thing that occurred to me, particularly after hearing what Martin said, is, you know, that deal when Batesy bought you from Reading, there was a clause, wasn't there, that he had to pay Reading £25,000 if you got capped for England. How did Batesy feel when he had to cough up that £25,000?
I'm sure he was gutted. But listen, at the end of the day, 9 years on, he sold me for 500 and something, whatever the odd was. I think he probably got his money's worth. He probably felt vindicated. But at the time, the 25 would have hurt him a little bit, I should think.
I bet. He wasn't known for liking giving money away, was he? I mean, you know, it's a good question, that, because, I mean, a lot of supporters, I mean, you know, Martin, myself, we were around when Bates was around, and, you know, he's a bit Marmite. And a lot of supporters these days probably won't even have heard of him, you know, what it's like. But what was your relationship with Ken like?
Yeah, it was fine. It's been documented. He helped me out loads of times when I got in problems with gambling and debts and stuff like that.
Post-football career?
No, during the time at Chelsea, no. Right. He bailed me out a few times. Things like, you know, we did a deal. But the thing is, I mean, he was a shrewd businessman even when he did that. He knew that sometimes I got in trouble and there'd be times when he'd be thinking, well, I could do with him on another 2 years. So he says, you've got problems, you can solve my problems. My board of directors and my vice presidents and vice chairman and all the rest of them need appeasing a little bit. Your contract comes to an end in two. We think you're good enough to stay with us, as he put it, for a few extra years. So I'm going to offer you some money, which you can take or decline. Yeah. Solve your problems, because I know you need it. And but you've got to sign in for an extra couple of years. I said, where do I sign? He said, right here. The money you'll be able to pick up within the next 10 hours. It'll be available. I said, can you do it a little bit quicker? He said, you made a phone call, and I picked up the money and signed the documents within an hour.
Brilliant. That's fantastic.
So, I mean, Ken was shrewd. I mean, my relationship with him was great.
Mm. And around that time, you had Pat Nevin, Nigel Spackman, Joe McLaughlin, Eddie Niswicki. You all arrived at the same time, didn't you?
Yeah. I mean, people used to say that David Speedy arrived at the same time, but he didn't actually. He was already there the year before. Yeah, there were six of us joined at the time. It was the summer.
That was under John Neil.
It was under John Neil, but one of them was John Ollins. He actually made up six. And John...
So he came back from Arsenal, yeah?
As a player coach. Yeah. And the five players, as you've already named, Nigel Spackman, Pat Nevin, Eddie Niswicki, myself, and Joe McLaughlin.
And you had a bit of a rocky relationship with David Speedy. Is that true, or is that the media making something out?
No, it was very rocky. Speedy has a rocky relationship with everyone. I mean, I don't think there's a person who's got two legs that he hasn't had a rocky relationship with.
Is he like that off the pitch as well?
He blows
up. So if you went out and had a pint, would he be fiery when he was out and about?
Good luck to you. Listen, David is David. You talk about Marmite. I mean, I love the bloke. He's a good friend of mine. Yeah. First three months, it was a bit of a nightmare situation. He was big friends with Colin Lee. They used to travel in from Camberley down that way all together with Nigel Spackman and that crew. I used to come from my end of the woods with Eddie Nisvesky and Joe McLaughlin. And it was a little bit like two camps because Connolly and myself started the season up front and Speedo was on the bench. He thought him and Colin should play up front. John Neal had other ideas. There was a bit of animosity. It came to a head in the Man City game where we swung punches at each other after the game and over he felt whether I should have passed. Obviously, when
it come to near, come to blows then.
He thought that he was in a better position, but knowing what I know now, I made the right decision, I feel. I mean, he might not have scored. If it was the other way around, he definitely should have passed because I would have scored. That's what I told him.
You scored twice on your debut against Derby as well, didn't you? You got 34 goals that season. We went up as champions.
Yep.
And how did you compare yourself to the great strikers around them days? Like, you had Van Basten and all it in Europe and Mark Hughes and...
Yeah, I mean...
Clive Allen and all them, Joe Jordan.
Gary Lineker.
How do you compare yourself to them?
The term great and the term legend is questioned by...
Well, you are a Chelsea legend, though, aren't you?
Well, you know, there you go. I don't use the term... myself.
Well, you can if you like to,
and it's very kind of you. I mean, legend, and I mean, people say legends, and people say greats, and who's a great to who, and so on. You know, Gary Lineker was my mate. He scored 48 times for England, the second highest. Third now, but the second highest England goal scorer of all time at the time.
Yeah.
That is great. That's phenomenal for a kid to grow up and do that. I was battling for a position with him. Sparky was doing well at United. Great, you know, United fans say great. Chelsea fans might say great. It's all terminology.
Yeah.
How did I compare? I thought Marco van Basten was one of the best I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Comparisons, I wouldn't even dream of it.
Yeah.
But listen, I did what I did and I tried my best. And, you know, a little bit gutted, if you want, about England. But I was grateful for the 8 caps that I got. I travelled with England for 4 years, mostly as sub. But I got 5 full caps and 3 substitute appearances.
And how did you find a step up from Reading to going to Chelsea, which is a...
I found it comfortable. Yeah, I mean,
You weren't doing fill out your depth or nothing like that.
If you ever get to know me, I've never been shy in confidence and stuff like that. No, I mean, if I failed, I failed. It wasn't a problem.
Was you anxious about?
You have to be nervous. You have to have a degree of. Butterflies, if you like, a little bit of an adrenaline surge because you're going out, like the Arsenal game the season after, the first game at Derby, there was only 15,000 fans there.
There were a few more at Highbury.
There was full house at Highbury. That was the season.
Did you describe that goal to us?
Because everyone
wants to know about the Kerry Dixon goal at Highbury.
Yeah, well...
That was unbelievable.
Your favourite goal, isn't it?
Is it your favourite goal?
It's my favourite goal for Chelsea. My favourite goal of all time was my first for England.
Right. You know, that was against West Germany.
And it was a tap in and nearly missed. And it went in off the post.
Horrible goal, but great goal.
Hang on.
They're all
from
great
here
goals.
On in,
they're
I'd,
all
I'd scored
goals.
For England.
Yeah. Exactly.
So, not many people can say
on
that,
your debut. And I was made up with that.
Yeah.
But in terms of what it meant, not necessarily the quality of the goal. It wasn't the best goal necessarily I've scored for Chelsea. But we were back. It made an announcement. The amount of people that were there to receive that announcement in the clock end and everywhere else. Goodness me, there was up in the seats. So I even saw scuffling in the North Bank, which was normal then.
Yeah.
It was incredible. Yeah. Chelsea fans were everywhere. The whole day when the team bus pulled round the corner, it was a sea of blue all the way up the hill, coming down. You're trying to get the changing rooms. I thought, goodness me. And when you come onto the field... Brilliant, the singing and the noise levels were fantastic. And of course, when the goal went in, I jumped, but it seemed like everyone was jumping. I mean, everyone was in the air.
Yeah.
The picture on Ken Bates' wall and a picture that is quite synonymous with that particular game is well rehearsed and well shown.
With the arms up.
And the crowd in behind, it was like going crazy. And I mean, anyone who was in there, the people who were in there.
Apparently, there are. If you work out how many were there, it's about 400,000 at the last count.
Yes. Well.
You know.
I think
that,
But
there were about 15,000-20,000 Chelsea in there.
Well,
11:30 kickoff.
That's right.
It was incredible.
You said the players have hangovers from the night before.
I'm not really sure about that. I wasn't really a drinker, you know.
Wow.
I started drinking at about the age of 23, the year I joined Chelsea.
Yeah.
I used to be soft drinks, lemonade and lime and things like that.
Yeah, yeah.
But, I mean, I don't know if it was Chelsea, Ken Bates or a mixture of all of it that actually started me on pills and lime and then it developed from there.
Yeah.
Look, you said something a minute ago, actually, which I think is really important to kind of emphasise. And there's a sense, actually, Kerry, that, you know, in that game against Arsenal, that you realised not just how important it was for you to, I mean, you know, back in the First Division,
yeah,
proving yourself at the highest level, if you like. But it wasn't just about you. It was also how important it was for the club as a club and for the supporters. I mean, I think that that's perhaps what sets the difference between your generation of players and perhaps the current generation. You got what the club was all about and what the supporters were all about, and that seemed to be really important for you. Is that a fair point?
Fair point, and very much so. The people who realised, you know, when we was coming up from in the second division, the travelling support was quite amazing. If there was 3,000 allocated tickets, 3,000 and or to 5,000 were sold, or 5,000 people went. If there was 8,000 available at certain places, there'd be 10,000 up there. It was incredible the amount of people that were following Chelsea in the second division. Now, you asked about Reading in the transition. Reading had good support and they were decent, but nothing like what was gathering at Chelsea and what the draw was as the season went on. I mentioned 15,000 the opening game. Well, within 2 months, 6 weeks or 2 months, there was 40,000 in every home game.
Wow.
And it was, Newcastle game was the first big one. We beat them 4-0. I never scored, actually. Pat Nevin, wonderful dribble. And
run, wasn't it?
Oh, the run. He caused havoc with their defence. He beat one of them, I think, three times. I think he just fell over because he was so dizzy, their fullback. Yeah. It became synonymous and part of it. And the Arsenal game, you didn't know what to expect. You knew that there'd be enough. But the sheer euphoria of it, and you say what it meant to people, I knew, talking to fans and talking to people, we're back, we're in the second division. Hold on, we've just equalised, or we've just drawn afterwards at a team that challenges for the title, the Arsenal, at their own in their own backyard, and Chelsea.
Very expensive signings.
Mariner, Woodcock, you know, they had some good players, great Pat Jennings, they had a very good side.
Internationals,
international side. Yeah. And this team that
they didn't have Doug Rugby, mate.
No, they never, but he let them know that he was about, and certainly let Viv Anderson know.
Well, that's what I was going to say. He nearly put him in the rosette, or tried to.
Yeah, Viv tells a story about it, and when he got hit by this train on the halfway line as he went on an overlap, but he didn't know what hit him. He said, he told me, "What have you signed at left back?"
He's as a player and a person, Doug Rovey. Nice fella.
Doug was a diamond, really nice bloke.
As a footballer?
Really nice bloke.
Oh, quality. Kerry, just to kind of hop back a bit, because, you know, you were talking about, you know, number one, you know, where how hard it is to rank yourself amongst others. And actually, just to remember,
I never would, if I'm being honest. You
I know.
That's for other people
Exactly. And you've got a lot of humility for somebody who achieved as much as you did. But there were some fantastic strikers around. Now, if you hear about the talk nowadays, Martin, about, well, you know, we need a striker who can get us at least 20 goals every season. Let me just read you this, right? This is your career stats, right? 83-84 season, you scored 34 goals. 85 season, this is back in the First Division, 36 goals. In the First Division, this is total, 24 in the league, plus all the
cup matches. I think 23 the year after, because I got a stomach injury in 86 at Liverpool. 21 goals in by January, and only two afterwards at United.
Exactly. So that
season, I do know the stuff.
That season, you're right, you were injured. So you scored,
I was top scorer
like,
in the league again. I was four clear of Gary, and I tore my stomach muscle at Liverpool.
But you still got 23 goals that season. 88-89, promotion season, 28. 89-90, back in the first. So you had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 seasons out of the 9 you were with us.
25
over plus. 20 goals.
Well, yeah.
What would he be worth today?
Yes, I was just going to ask you.
What would you reckon
say?
He'd be worth today?
Well, I don't know.
If Lukaku could go to wherever he's gone.
But he's got a good record for Belgium.
Not knocking him, but if he can go for 75 million, or whatever it was.
Well, you know, again, it's a thing, price tags and the rest of it, who's worth what to who, and how much they're prepared to pay for him. You know, basically, United were in for me, and Rangers were in for me, and, you know, some other people were in for me. While I was at Chelsea, Bates blocked everything.
Apparently, he blocked you to go to Arsenal, and he blocked you to go to West Ham. Was that true?
He sacked John Ollins a couple of weeks later. He told me he was going to do that. He said, "Be quiet about it." But you know,
would you have gone to Arsenal or West Ham?
Good question.
Would you have gone? Well, the way the Chelsea fans loved you, would you?
I didn't want to go, put it that way. I felt I was trying to be forced out.
Really?
But not necessarily by Batesy.
Just to kind of step back a bit, because what a lot of the senior players, there were a lot of fallout, a lot of turmoil around the club at that time. What was that all about? I mean, is it just simply John Ollins' management?
And early Wally, without shadow of a doubt.
And Ernie Wally mainly, yeah?
No, I'm not going to blame Ernie, I'm not going to blame John. John Ollins is an absolute lovely man, he always has been. Yeah. He goes on record, he wasn't my favourite manager. Yeah. You know, if you want it on record, you've got it. I've told him to his face anyway. He's the worst manager I've ever played under. And Ernie, I got off great with. But he upset Speedo, Spackman, Izvesky, and, you know.
How did he upset him then, Kerry, with his tactics? Or
yeah, they didn't like they didn't like the way he approached things. Ernie was all right with me. He was rough and ready and, you know, get in and do it or you'll be back for training. I was all right with that because I would do what I would do. Mm. The others, Speedo would row every day of the week. But, you know, every now and again, he's fed out with Nigel, he's fed out with any other thing. But it was just his style. But John brought him in to be that type of man because John was such a nice guy. Yeah. He wanted some abrasive character around the place. Type. And, you know, in certain worlds, that would have been the dream team. You know, you're a nice guy, let him do all the dirty work. So he did the dirty work. People were arguing with him. But then John should have stepped in and sorted it out. And he didn't do that. I just laughed a bit, but it all became, the place became a shambles. They were singing songs. We were walking down a road and they were singing, Please Release Me, Let Me Go, and all that. And there was Johnny Ollins and Ernie used to be in their room. We were at Harlington and all, the whole crescendo, you're going to Please Release Me, and about 15 players singing it.
I don't know about what you remember of that. I mean, a lot of us were gutted.
We ended up getting relegated because of it.
Yeah, exactly. You know, we realised
Bobby Campbell came back up in 88-89 season with the same players, bar two. Yeah. The same squad that went down. Yeah. A little bit of arm around a few people. You know, a few faces had changed because Speedy had gone, Spackman had been gone. Eddie Nizveski had injured his knee, but he replaced him with Dave Besson, who had come in the season before, but we went down with him. And we had Roberts and Nicholas, the only two players changed from the squad that went down. Stevie Clark, Tony DiRigo, Clive Wilson, myself, Gordon Jury. We all went down.
Yeah.
And yet the same team come back up as champions. We didn't lose for a run of 26 games, and we finished the year after fifth in the first division again.
Which is the best that we did in your time, certainly.
Well, we were challenging for the title in 90 up until a very dodgy Easter. But anyway.
West Ham, QPR.
Roberts and Peter Nicholas added a bit of stilt to that side through the centre.
They added what was ever necessary. Graham Roberts was a very underrated footballer as a man. He was a very good captain and a very good leader. And Peter Nicholas had similar qualities. Yeah. They came in as captain and vice captain.
That's what I'm saying. They added a bit of depth and still
a bit more organised. They come on a bit of, you know. But the most important thing was Bobby Campbell. I won't get away with that. And, you know, credit to the man. He was one of the best managers I played under, and he was underrated by Chelsea fans. Yeah. He soothed the dressing room that was hostile.
Yeah, which is no mean feat.
And they were internationals. Pat actually went. I'm not quite sure when he went under Bobby.
Middlesbrough, wasn't it?
Yeah, after whatever year. But you know, Stevie Clark, Gordon Jury, Kevin Wilson, Northern Ireland, and myself, all international players. Yeah. And you know, you come into a dressing room hostile with that sort. You've got to be some sort of good manager to calm it all down and then produce results. Although having said that, I think the first six games, we struggled in. We got 3 points out of six games and then we went unbeaten for 20.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. You in? Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Chidge.
JK. In all the years you've been following Chelsea, you hardly ever miss a match, home or away. But how would you feel if you couldn't be there and it's not on TV?
Oh, Chidge, I'd be bereft, inconsolable. The thought of missing my beloved Blue Boys live. It's all too much.
I know, JK, I know. It's all a bit too much, isn't it?
Yes.
Well, panic not. NordVPN have come to the rescue.
They have?
Yep, NordVPN allows us to watch any match, even if it's not on live TV here.
They do?
Yeah, they do. With just one click, they switch your virtual location to a country which is showing the match, and they act as your cyber bodyguard whilst online, protecting your personal data and sensitive info like card details and passwords.
Oh, wow, great. But yeah, I bet that'll cost me a fortune.
Actually, JK, it's only the price of a cup of coffee per month, and you can use your account across 6 devices. It's a bargain, JK. And best of all, no more tears for you.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, NordVPN. I'm so happy. I could cry. Where do I sign up, Jinj?
Well, to get the best discount off your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/ChelseaFancast. There's no risk with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee, and you'll help support the Chelsea Fancast. The link is in the podcast episode description box.
Six.
I think the first win was against Leeds, wasn't it, up at Elland Road?
Walsall. I'm not sure. Anyway, Stats, you should know more. You'd know better than I would. But I think Walsall in the League Cup, we won in the League Cup game. Something along them lines.
About 5 or something, wasn't it?
Quite sure, but we won. You thumped and then the run started.
Listen, that's a good segue, actually, because I've always wanted to know this, because, you know, a lot of my lot, my generation, they loved the 84-85 team, you know, and the kit and everything.
It was my best team that I played under.
Well, I was going to ask you that, because actually, statistically, the 88-89 team
was better.
And then that you ended up, because the 84-85 ended up 6th, 88-89-90 ended up
5th.
So who do you think was the better team? Yeah. Was it the 84-85 or the 88-89-90?
The 84-85 had so much more potential. We were two fullbacks short. It was an exciting team. You didn't know what we didn't know how far we could go, where we were going to go, and I believe it could have gone right to the top if things would have panned out. John Neal hadn't been taken ill. John Hollins didn't take over as manager, although he was the obvious candidate because he was such a great coach. Part of what it was, just move up one. Ian McNeil stay where he was. He was shunted to the side. It's just, they were both joint managers, but Johnny Hollins was the manager. They'd only come in and it all just started to go down. But, you know, John messed me around from the point of view. He signed Gordon Jury with a view to replacing me. He tried to sell me, and then I knew that, and he went away. He left me out the last game of the season just before the World Cup. I knew what he was up to, no problem. But then he wants to, the following season, he said, things happen in politics and football. I haven't gone, I'm still there, back for pre-season, but I know in the background, and it all starts to go a bit pear-shaped. You know, he's playing me, Speedy, Jury, didn't know who to play. Then next season, Ernie's arguing with Speedo, he's out the door. But I still know that I felt stabbed in the back. Yeah. And you know, how do you pull it round for someone who's, you know, he don't really want you and he's trying to move you out.
So why was he trying to move you out?
Don't ask me. I never knew. He never explained it. He would deny it. He'd say, yeah. I never.
But you carried on banging the goals in way after that.
I think there was a period. I did score.
You did?
So it would be 86, 87 under John Hollins.
I mean, you dropped off then. You got 12 and 86, 87, but I don't think you were fit then, were you? You were kind of,
I got fit. And I went to the 86 World Cup, you remember?
Yeah.
And I played for England during a time, the following October or November time, in Sweden. And it was my last England cap as well. So that particular period, when I was in the doldrums a bit, I played for England, and Bobby Robson told me, it's make or break time for you. I'm putting you in against Sweden in the World Cup qualifier. Mm. And we lost 1-0 out in Sweden. Yeah. We didn't win there too often anyway. No. I did miss one chance, but I didn't get many because Sweden were a better side on the day. Yeah. But club football wasn't going great for me either. Right.
And was it like pulling on an England shirt then, Kerry, for you?
It was the greatest thing, and it still is the greatest thing that ever happened to a boy who grew up dreaming of being a footballer to actually play for your country and to score. It's still the greatest feat.
Playing your first international or plant race?
Well, my first one, I was incredibly proud. And when John Hollins said you'd be picked for the England squad,
how does that come about? Do you get a phone call or does the manager call you in?
Got called in the morning and we were training. And he got said, you've been picked in the England squad. So I finished off training in a bit of a daze, really.
Yeah, I bet.
And went back in to get changed. I didn't sort of tell anyone. And then people started hearing it on teletext and things like that, which were days, you know.
Club call and teletext.
There was no mobile phones that were just quirk,
no internet.
And all that sort of stuff. And heard it on the news, and it was in the papers the next day, the squad been announced and all that stuff. So,
what was it like running out? Where was it? Wembley, the first game?
No.
It was Mexico.
Mexico, that was it. Yeah, yeah. And how did you feel then?
The pre-World Cup tour, you didn't run out. We walked out and we warmed up. But it was in the Aztec Stadium when I got my full debut. Yeah. But I come on a sub against Mexico in the game before. And I got, that was one of my substitute appearances, 15 minutes. Did all right, actually. I'll come on for Mark Hatley. Well, him and Ray Wilkins were going back to Italy, and Robson told me, you're going to play the last game against the Germans. I was nervous, but as I say, you looking forward to it. And the great thing about it was that standing in that lineup of players, as you do, against the Germans, and they're the other side of the referee, people going along with the cameras, the TVs and the crew and the reporters and everything else. Panini stickers here on in, Kerry Dixon, Chelsea and England. Yeah. It was incredible. The anthem made my hair stand up on the back of my neck.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, we were, I'm sure you know this because we've talked about this. I know we have. But the amount of pride we had in you playing for England was astonishing because, you know, for one reason or another, Chelsea very rarely get players. I mean, you know, back in Ozzy's day, I mean, he was completely underused by Ramsey because he thought he was a bit of a dilettante or whatever. So the pride we had in a Chelsea man playing for England was huge, you know. So
lovely.
It affected us as well. I think that's definitely what I'm trying to say, you know. Yeah. And you played in the World Cup finals, Kerry.
Yeah.
Nobody played, never take that away.
Oh, you can't take it away. I played 6 minutes. I had three touches and I never gave the ball away.
There you go.
I'm very proud.
See, nowadays on FIFA, that would give you really high marks. Oh,
Optostats, so I'm 100%.
Exactly,
oh, great player.
Exactly.
Brilliant.
How did you learn about you was leaving Chelsea for South
Exactly
Africa?
That.
Yeah, leaving. It was in 92. Batesy had said it was an end of season tour to Canada. And I got an idea. I think Batesy had probably had enough. I'd been gambling. It didn't really affect me. Bobby Campbell used to say, don't know how you do it, you know, with what problems you have in life and, you know, in terms of gambling and, you know, and still managed to play football because I'd scored what I'd scored in 1990, 89-90 season. Bobby was there part of it when he fixed it up with Batesy that, you know, sort something out for me, which they did, by signing contracts and, you know, making things available again. But because I had 3.5 years left on the contract. Bobby Tambling calls me the man who kept him in business, and you know I should have put him out of business, and I should have, if I'd have stayed for 3.5 years, I'd have put Frank out of business as well. So Batesy had decided he probably had enough. That's what I got the message, because Bobby Campbell said the old man's not going to sort it out this time. I said, no problem, I'll just sort it out myself. But then we were on a end of season tour to Canada, and they'd signed Clive Allen, and Tony Cascarino was there, and I thought to myself, that's all right, we'll battle for positions. They're good lads, both of them good blokes. And Batesy, Campbell had moved on, and Porterfield had taken over. And Porterfield said, we're going to Canada. Batesy's coming. I said, oh, no problem. Well, Batesy pulled me in, and Porter says, he wants to see you for breakfast in the morning. Batesy, I says, all right, be there at 9, we're going off and doing whatever. It's okay. So I went to speak to Batesy, didn't go with the rest of the team. And Batesy said, look, I know you've got 3.5 years, I'll cut to the chase. I've made a deal with Southampton for £575,000. You can go. How do you feel about that? I says, I'll talk to him. But I says, I wouldn't hold your breath about me going. Well, what makes you think I'm going to go? I've got 3.5 years left. Mm-hmm. He said, well, put it this way. I've done a deal, which means, effectively, I've done a deal. We're signing new strikers. We've decided that we're not going to pursue you. We've got Clive and Tony and that. And we're getting two more in. And we're spending a lot of money. And one or two or maybe all three of you could be surplus to requirements. Mm-hmm. But, you know, Southampton want you. So that's the deal. I said, well, I'll talk to him. He said, well, put it this way, you'll never play for the club again. You'll be in the reserves, and then 3.5 years, you'll do in the reses. Oh, I just went like that. It was food for thought, but If I'd known that I'd spent the money, £2 million, on Robert Fleck and Mick Harford, I'd have stayed.
And we would have been very grateful if you had.
And I said, come on, now, us five would have done battle for the position. I think I might have done it. But listen, I wasn't playing great. You know, I did have a few problems off the field. And I'm not blasé enough to think...
Did that affect your football? Did it affect your football?
I've gambled all my life. You ask yourself your own question. Yeah. I gambled when I was at Reading. I got suspended at school for gambling with dinner tickets at the age of 12. Right. So I played cards every trip away. Yeah. We played cards home and away every game for every team I played for. Yeah. Does it affect me? I lost £3,000 in listening to it on a mobile phone in a toilet at Oxford. Just before we went out, Bobby Campbell's moaning at me because, what are you doing in there? I said, I'm going to the toilet. I need to do before everyone else is warming up. I was listening to the horse race at 20-3. The horse lost. I lost £3,000. I lost £3,000. It was £1,500 each way. The horse come fourth as normal. And I went out. We beat Oxford, I think it was 4-3 or 4-1 by Gatwick.
Yeah.
So that's your answer to it. Though,
I think 193 goals says no, actually, yes. Kerry. But there you go.
People might argue if you didn't go, if you did everything right, if you ate the right food, you didn't drink, you might have had 293. But listen.
If my auntie had bollocks, she'd be my uncle, mate.
There you go.
I'm more curious about. I mean, actually, it's really interesting. I've known you pretty well, mate, and I've never heard you tell that side of it about leaving the club. I mean, that sounds awful. You have no say in it at all. I mean, how did you feel?
I did
how
have
did
a say.
You feel about that?
Well, I did have a say. I've got 3.5 years left on a contract.
Yeah, but you're not going to sit and play in the reserves. Because how old were you then?
32.
You were 32. So you know you've got. Well, a couple I had to of weigh it up.
Well, listen, Southampton offered me a deal. They offered me a signing on fee, which would have cleared off issues and give me a little lump as well. They were in the first division. They wanted me. Yeah. Ian Brandt, they wanted me. Southampton fans, no, not really. I didn't really hit it off down there. I didn't really want to take on Batesy about the reses. He hadn't signed Fleck and Arford at the time. It would have ended up an argument and 3.5 years. I didn't look forward to it, you know. I just made a decision, go on and I'll go.
Was he a man you could voice your opinions to, or would he get the ump with you?
He'd get the ump. But
was he a man, if you said to him, listen, I ain't going to do this or I ain't doing that, would he listen to you, or would he get the ump and sell?
No, he'd listen. You'd have to listen, because, you know, he'd probably try and sell you again. I don't know. You'd have to ask him that question. But he was a good bloke, don't get me wrong here. He's doing what he thought was best for the club, but he, in my opinion, he had a nightmare in that one. You know, he had some nightmares. He had some masterstrokes. You know.
Well, were you sad to leave the club? I mean, you had 9 great years there.
Oh, of course. I didn't want to go. But I had Bobby Tamblyn in my sights. I was 9 goals away from him.
Were you aware of that then? I mean, were you thinking about that?
I was aware of that from, you know, when I got past Ozzy and Roy Bentley at 150. Yeah. I was heading for
sights.
The next one. I was heading for Bobby. Yeah. And it was one of them things. I thought to myself, but that was probably my biggest regret. Not smashing Chelsea's scoring record and not putting it beyond Frank and anyone else who might come along.
You could have done.
3.5 years, if I scored 10 goals a year, if I played 10 goals a year, that would have been my worst 3 years ever at Chelsea.
Yeah.
And if I managed to get game 10 goals in however many games I might have played, there's another 30 goals on top.
Yeah. You would have took some catching then, wouldn't you?
So that would have
I think so.
Can I just ask you, after Southampton, you went to Luton.
Yeah.
And then you played against us in the semi-final at Wembley. How did you feel about that?
It was the most emotional day of my footballing life.
In terms of emotion,
in terms of endearment, in terms of... I still remember it now, and it still makes, you know, the hairs stand up on the back of my neck.
Did you hear a Chelsea fan singing your name?
That's it. I couldn't believe it. And the noise and, you know... Wisey came across, you know, he's my room partner, Dennis. My last 3 years at Chelsea, Dennis was my room partner. He says, can you hear that? He says, that's unbelievable. And I said, I can hear it. It's embarrassing. It's absolutely fantastic. A losing player on a semi-final could get that.
That just shows you what the Chelsea fans thought.
It was incredible. And I'll never forget it. And, it made it the most emotional day. The club I love against the club I supported, the hometown club at Wembley, and the fans doing that. And we'd lost the game, and, you know,
And then, but, and the Chelsea fans in the moment are winning, really. And
instead of celebrating with their own players, they were singing my name. It was incredible.
Yeah, I was there. Yeah,
and it was emotional. And I just said to Dennis, "Oh, I've got to go off."
I don't
cry too much. Yeah, I feel like crying. I might well up a little bit, but I don't cry. I'm not one of these who kiss the badge.
He's old school, mate.
Kiss the badge, cry in every club, and all that stuff. Love every ring. The things that make that you do love, you love. I see it today. Oh, it's embarrassing. If you don't cry on a football field when you lose a semi-final, if you don't play well, you don't win. You don't cry about it, fall down, and try and make out a load of emotion that is not really there. Because half of them are not there. They cry every game. Yeah. Pick a game of season, you get different players crying on it.
Yeah.
Get on with it, you know.
But did you get a bit emotional?
Yeah, a little bit. I did. Yeah.
Yeah. Who wouldn't, man?
Yeah, I bet you would. Yeah.
Because it's unparalleled, Martin.
I've never heard it.
Before or since, mate. Honestly, I can't think of another example of that.
I've been going to Chelsea since 17 years after.
Yeah.
You know, football. I retired from football and in the hospitality side of things and. Apart from about a year off. But other than that, you know, I've not heard nothing like it, not because it's me, but, you know, lots of people get good welcomes and people say to me, certain players go and come back and what sort of welcome will they get, what they won't, and, you know, the chance to say goodbye, Frank, and you think, you know, JT's coming back, you know, things like that. Mm. You know, I don't know, but I'm happy with my lot and I'll never forget it.
Okay.
No, you are a Chelsea legend, undoubtedly.
Is he ever? I think, you know, exactly. Beyond any doubt. And you're right, though, what you were saying earlier, Kerry, it's a weird word, legend, isn't it? It's bandied around a lot. But I think there are far fewer legends than people think. But you are one, my friend.
I'm just
going to ask some fairly kind of general, quick kind of... bit like, imagine you're in... Actually, it's very appropriate, because you realised, I think today or yesterday... Is the 50th anniversary of Shoot magazine or the 40th anniversary of
50th?
We used to have
I bet you were in Shoot, weren't
Shoot
you?
Shoot and Goal and yeah, Match. Yeah, yeah. You know,
so it's magazine. A bit like that. I'm not going to ask you what your favourite dinner... I'm not going to ask you what your favourite dinner was, though.
There was a few others about it.
All right, so very quickly. Favourite Chelsea players, best Chelsea player you played with, who were your best mates at Chelsea?
Oh, Joe McLaughlin was my room partner. Dennis was my room partner.
Yeah.
Don't make them your best mates, but they were at the time high on it. Speedos. I didn't really.
You got on with everybody.
I didn't. Yeah, I did. I get on with. It wasn't a. I never had a best mate.
No.
They were all good mates to me. They're all teammates, and they're still good mates. I didn't really not get on with anyone.
As in one you disliked. Or can't
you say?
Yeah. We'll leave it at that.
It's not my style to say. I dislike it.
That'll be a quiz question later.
Yeah. I wonder who they are.
I'll give you the initials off air. So one of them's Universal for sure, and the other one's a bit of a steward.
All right, okay. Well, after when we've stopped this, we'll ask you. What about the best Chelsea players you played with in terms of quality?
And best is another term that comes up, and you know, people have asked me this question before. How can you compare... Peter Shilton, for example, plays a goal, 1,000 games, 150 times for England or whatever, with Gary Lineker, who's the best, or Glenn Hoddle or Brian Robson, or, you know, you're talking about positions. So the best teammate, the best player you played with, David Speedy was the best natural partner I could wish to play alongside. Mm. We were perfectly suited.
Yeah.
You know, he did things... very well, which I didn't do so well, and vice versa. Mm. And the match was a dream, you know.
Yeah. Worked really well, didn't it?
It worked well. Yeah. And Pat, of course, on the wing, you know, supplemented that with his finesse and his ability and skill. Yeah. And he's a lovely guy as well.
Yeah, lovely
I mean, absolute lovely man. But you take into that who you played with. I played with Tony Adams, the under-23s, which is not about now. In Iceland, he was a captain of the under-23s. I was an overage player. What a player Tony Adams was. Mm. Best I played against in terms of a centre-half. Pallister and Bruce were decent. There was a few... Lawrenson and Hansen were decent at Liverpool. But, you know...
Who were the toughest
John
opponents?
Barnes was a wonderful player, much underrated player, a bit maligned at the time. He played 80 or 87...
John Barnes?
John Barnes was
massively
a wonderful
skillful.
Player.
Massively skillful.
Massively skillful. Glenn Hoddle, Brian Robson.
Yeah.
They talk about Captain Fantastic... What a fantastic player Robson was as an all-round player. People don't realise that he doesn't get the credit.
No.
Glenn Hoddle, because he's God and he's magnificent and great ability. But Brian Robson, out of the three, he was automatic, and it was between Wilkins, Reid, Hoddle, who partnered Brian Robson.
Yeah.
Well, if you think about how, you know, the rivalries and the tribal rivalries now, I remember, because I was a lot younger then, I think, but, you know, I loved Hoddle as a player. He played for Spurs.
You could not help but be...
I loved Robbo as a player. You couldn't say that now. They were absolutely superb players.
Well, say, could you... You know, they asked the question, do you think you could play now and all the rest of it? Oh, the game's improved, the game's got better, the game's got quicker. What a load of tosh. I totally go against that. Could Brian Robson get in Chelsea's midfield now?
Yep.
Could Gary Lineker play up front?
Yeah.
So don't ask me the question, because it's a load of tosh.
Exactly.
Right, who's the best manager you ever played under? You mentioned Bobby Campbell.
No, John Neil was the best, but he only had a year.
Yeah.
We won the championship in the second division before you get the chance to see what he can really do at a higher level, perhaps.
Yeah.
Bobby Robson gave me the chance. I mean, much maligned Bobby Robson, but what a wonderful record he had.
He had a good football, didn't he?
Well, he didn't know who the hell he was picking and stuff like that. They say he picked the wrong players, he called the wrong names, he didn't have the tactics.
Before,
You know, look at his CV.
Yeah.
You know, he picked me for England. I'll be eternally grateful for a man who decided that at some stage in his life I should be the England centre forward.
Yeah.
So he's up there as well. Morris Evans picked me and give me my league debut for Reading. Great manager as well. Great.
Yeah.
Terminology again. Yeah. Great for me.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
Your proudest moment as a Chelsea player?
As a Chelsea player?
Yeah.
Proud? Wembley.
Well, the most 94.
Yeah. 94.
And I was a Luton player.
I know, but that's a really good point. We were talking about that.
My proudest moment was Wembley-Chelsea connection, but I was a Luton player. Proud as a Chelsea player? Ooh.
The Arsenal goal at Ivory?
No, that's not proud. That was something that evolved and happened.
Yeah.
You don't get it's not a proud. Proud is what happened at Wembley.
Yeah.
Proud. It's, you know, the terminology you apply to certain things. It's not about, you can't be, I'm proud I scored that goal. I'm proud I scored 34, 36 and so on.
No,
proud I was top scorer in the league. But
it
wasn't a proud Chelsea moment.
Right.
Proudest Chelsea moment was standing in the Aztec Stadium for England.
A
being a Chelsea player.
Great answer.
That's a great answer, isn't it?
And what makes Chelsea fans so special to you?
You should know the answer to that inside out.
I'll
argue that with what makes Chelsea fans now. Terminology again, which is me all over. Question terminology, if you ever speak to me. I was like this as a player as well. Chelsea fans. Now, do you consider the 300 strong in Malaysia, who are Chelsea Blue? The 200 or 450 in Cork Island? Do you consider the Norwegian fans? Are they Chelsea? They're all Chelsea fans because the game's going global.
Yeah.
Chelsea fans, they make it all worthwhile for me. The Chelsea fans are the ones who've made it all worthwhile.
Then and now.
Then and now.
Yeah, good answer, Kerry.
So what do you
think
of the modern-day Chelsea players or modern-day footballers now?
Need to improve.
In what respect?
Not good enough. If you're talking this time, it's going to be an indifferent season. It's going to be a tough season. Love the appointment of Frank Lampard. Magnificent. And I like United doing Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. Why shouldn't they do what they do? We've given it to an obscure bloke from Porto who happened to turn out to be our best ever manager.
Not AGB.
You know the one. We've given it to AG. We've given it to VS Boas. Yeah. We've given it to lots of different people who turned out to be not so good.
Yeah.
You know?
Why not Frank?
Why not Frank?
Yeah.
Why the hell not?
Right.
And if he turns out to be great, forgive him this season, because we can't buy him. We sold our best player and one of our best defenders, and he's having some faith in the kids. Chelsea fans will and should overlook that and let him have this season and accept we will win some. And we will lose some.
Easy.
We will win some we don't expect to win, but we will lose some we expect to win.
Yeah, no, it'd be like it was in your day.
Well,
I reckon.
Did you go into coaching, Kerry? You ever gone into one of those?
Yeah,
coach,
I mean, no. Oh, that's another side of it.
Have
I went
you done
to
your badges?
I went, I went to Doncaster dummy badges. I coached. The politics behind the scenes at some of the lower football, Berry going out, some of the things I see, there's a man who owned a club who's not even on the board of directors trying to pick the team, ringing me up, causing havoc, ringing play in the end.
So well for you.
Oh, jeez.
Right.
If that's what they really have to go through.
And
Good luck.
Just ask you one thing about Great Wakering Wanderers, was it?
Did you... Yeah, Rovers. Great Wakering Rovers. Yeah, I played for them.
How did I dig that out?
I didn't know that was coming either.
Yeah, a friend of mine, Dave Kuzak, used to be centre-half for Millwall, actually. Was manager down there and asked me if I played a couple of games right near the end of career. I was playing local football, St Joe's, Sunday League, and just keep myself fit because another person asked me to turn out. A bit of fun, you know, Sundays, ended up mad Sundays, but... Yeah. So why not have a mad Saturday as well? So.
Exactly.
So Great Wakering.
Great
Wakering, Letchworth, Hitchin, lovely. Dunstable. Yeah. I played on all them on Saturdays.
Football pyramid. I'm right. Brilliant. Final question because I need to wrap up really. Yeah. Just to ask you about, you know, what makes the Chelsea fans special. What makes Chelsea as a football club special, Kerry?
People get out of Chelsea Football Club what you put in. And I mean, come in for a season, get a few quid, come in for three seasons, get a few quid, go out. Yeah, the feeling you get will be reciprocated if it's genuine. So you will get out of it what you put in. I'll just give you a little example. When there was a family day, there used to be things like that, and before every season, it isn't a case of, like these days, get security to make sure the players don't get near the fan. You can wave to them and you can sign one or two autographs and everything else. Fans used to turn up, lots of them, and they used to fill the stand or both sides of the ground and watch the players train and things like that. I, on numerous occasions, would be last man standing and people were waiting for my autograph. I would sign them all. Gianfranco Zola would do the same. I used to see in times gone by, similar days, family days, when I was asked to come and commentate actually for club radio. And Terry and Lampard, when they'd walk through European airports, things like that, would stop and the security, come on, move on. You would get certain types now with the hoods up, the earphones on the phone, to walk through some quite popular, some not so popular, but they walk through. There's fans waiting, please sign all of it. Going out their way, they could easily get through, pick up their luggage and go. But no, the team's coming through, they wait. Sign the autograph. So you get out what you put in. Those that are getting out, you will find, are those that have put in.
Yeah. I mean, I've always been struck, actually, by how many foreign players come over and then they leave and they always talk about Chelsea being their club. I mean, the best...
Do you really believe it? I believe it with Didier. Believe
Michael
it with
Ballack.
Interesting. Ballack, yeah. I've heard him say it.
Well, I mean,
How long was he there?
Not very long, but I mean, I think this is
Ballack could have been, I understand, Chancellor of Germany or closer to it. Or
well, he should probably be more Bayern Munich,
so,
you would have thought.
So, but does he say that about every club he's played for?
I don't see him do that. I really don't.
So
I,
you
I
think he's, Chelsea's his
well,
club?
Not as much as you are, for example, but that would be understandable. Well, but I do think
I'm not challenging your example.
I think it gets under their skin.
Against me, I'm...
No. I think it gets under players' skin. That's the point. In a way that very few other clubs seem to. You know, a lot of people who leave this club, they always seem to talk about Chelsea very, very fondly. And I think I've just noticed that.
All of them?
Well, no, not all of them, but
Gallas?
A lot of them. Who? Gallas, did he play for Chelsea? I don't remember Gallas. You know,
who knows? Well, it could have been his. But what a lovely time I had there. Yeah,
you know
great.
What I mean. You know.
I know what you mean, but. People pick wording and, you know, I don't believe after the tosh that, you know, comes out. I look at all that stuff and
I don't,
it don't wash
for
me. It don't wash for me.
Mate.
I wouldn't ever kiss a badge, whether I could love them more than anyway. It don't make no difference. What are you doing?
Yeah.
What are you doing? And the biggest questionable one of them all, I have said before, would I have celebrated if I'd have scored against Chelsea? Good question. We'll finish on that. And you're not getting the answer.
Brilliant finish. Kerry, as always, mate, you've been fantastic. Thanks so much. Cheers, mate.
No problem.
It's the 90th minute. All your mates around. You've got your McNuggets share boxes ready to go. Your mates already got booked for double dipping and you steal the last nugget, snatching all 3 points. Perfect! Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. You in? At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.